Hello, on this week's program, the National Trust for Historic Preservation has named Philadelphia's Boyd Theatre to its 2008 list of America's most endangered historic places. The theatre will be sold to a private investor next week who could, under an existing demolition permit, order its destruction. We look at attempts to save the Boyd. Susan Lewis profiles Philadelphia's Settlement Music School, now celebrating its centennial. And Jason Pfeiffer previews the Arden Theatre's production of Our Town, the classic Pulitzer Prize-winning play by Thornton Wilder. Part of the show takes place in historic Christchurch in Old City, Philadelphia, and each performance features a different musical group from the region. That's all ahead this morning, creatively speaking.
Support for Creatively Speaking comes from the Pennsylvania Council on the Arts and the listeners of WRTI.
Earlier this week, a rally in Philadelphia focused attention on the possible demise of one of the city's last standing old-time movie palaces. The Boyd Theatre opened on Christmas Day 1928, with its carved limestone facade etched with colour and its marquee lit at night with changing colours. It was Philadelphia's only Art Deco first-run movie palace. A shop-lined promenade led from Chestnut Street to a sumptuous interior, with floor-to-ceiling mirrors, wall statues and crystal lighting fixtures. Though solely used for screening movies, it had a stage and a 30-foot-high proscenium arch that stretched 50 feet across. It also had an organ, a movable orchestra pit, and 12 dressing rooms backstage. In 1971, the Boyd became the Sam Eric with its sale to the corporation of the same name. In the 1980s, three smaller auditoriums were added, making it Sam Eric IV. The cinema was sold in 1988 to United Artists, and in 1998 to local developers the Goldenberg Group. It continued to show first-run films, including the world premiere of the Academy Award-winning Philadelphia, starring Tom Hanks, until May of 2002, when it closed and the Goldberg Group secured a demolition permit. The Boyd seemed to have been rescued in 2005 when the commercial broadcaster and concert promoter Clear Channel purchased it, intending to use it as a venue for music theatre and other performances. Plans were in place for a $31 million renovation when, in 2006, the company decided to focus more on rock concert promotions and to divest itself of many of its theatrical venues. The Boyd Theatre is now again for sale, and its new owner could still legally demolish it. Meanwhile, the Boyd is on the Preservation Alliance of Philadelphia's Endangered Properties list, and this week was named as one of America's most endangered historic places by the National Trust for Historic Preservation. Neither of these designations, however, has any legal power to stop a demolition. In addition, Philadelphia City Councilman Bill Green has introduced a bill that would protect a building such as the Boyd based on the historic value of its interior. Current law allows protection only for exteriors. Earlier this week, the Friends of the Boyd, an advocacy group working to preserve the theatre, organised a rally outside the building, and we went along to get to the heart of why the theatre should be saved.
Adrian Scott Fine, Director of the Northeast Field Office for the National Trust for Historic Preservation. Now more than ever, it's at a critical juncture as far as what's going to happen with the Boyd. Next week, potentially, we'll have a new buyer, and we're hopeful it's going to be a preservation-minded buyer, but it very well could be somebody that has a different motive. This really is advocacy, drawing the spotlight on the Boyd at this critical time, and asking all the key players and decision makers that can influence an outcome here to step up and come together and work to find a solution. I think there's a lot of options and alternatives, approaches that we can look at this. It's not just about preserving the theater. It has to be economically viable. The numbers have to work, and we want to make sure that happens. So we're open to all kinds of different ways, and whether that's introducing some new construction in combination with the restoration, I think that's a possibility here. It's all got to be worked out in the details, but it's certainly not off the table. There's only one other venue in Philadelphia that has this type of size and capacity of seating. And that is a liability if Philadelphia loses this venue on top of that. There's no reason why all of these things can't exist together. I think there's a way for doing that. We understand, it's going to add more competition, but we think competition is actually a good thing for Philadelphia.
Have you guys been speaking to any of the potential purchasers, or do you know who they are, these developers who are waiting in the wings possibly to buy the building?
We don't know everybody. We have been talking with some folks, trying to assist them and help them as far as preservation incentives and other other things that we can offer. But as far as the total list of potential bidders, we're not aware of who they all are.
And of the ones you've spoken to, what's your sense of the level of interest they have in maintaining this as a working venue?
I think there's some that have some serious interest in preserving the place and finding a way to make it, reopened and restored for some type of public arts cultural venue. So I think there's some strong interest in preservation. On the flip side, we think there's also going to be some strong interest from developers and others that will simply see this as a development site. You know, Philadelphia, for all of its history and culture and wealth of historic resources, I think because we have so much of it, we take it for granted. And we don't wake up to these situations until it's too late. And that's, again, goes to the message why the National Trust put this on their listing is we don't want to wake up one day and find the void being demolished without doing everything in our power to really draw attention and showcase what it could be and that it's too important to lose for Philadelphia.
John Gallery, Executive Director of the Preservation Alliance. The Boyd Theater represents a number of different things. It is part of the sort of cultural history of the city. Movie palaces were a very important cultural event in Philadelphia, and as buildings, they were enormously distinctive, and they're all gone. This is the only one that's left. And when you have only one thing left that's representative of, a class of buildings and activities in Philadelphia, I think it's important to preserve that because it's the last physical embodiment of an important part of the story of the history of Philadelphia.
Many people won't have ever been inside the Sam Eric or the Boyd. Can you describe it to us?
The theater is one of the few of these larger movie palaces that were designed in the Art Deco style that was popular in the 20s and 30s. So it's a very ornate theater and a very colorful theater with murals and special lighting features and a lot of architectural details throughout the building. And what's remarkable about it is that basically all of that historic character still remains. It needs to be restored, but it's never been removed. And that's very unusual, and that's one of the reasons why we're trying to preserve the building.
Which takes me to my next question. What condition is it in? Has water penetrated the building? What condition are all these wonderful interior features?
Actually, Clear Channel and Live Nation have done a pretty good job in protecting the building. Clear Channel removed all the asbestos. They repaired the roof to make sure the building wouldn't leak. Certainly there is some deterioration because the building has been neglected, for 20 years. But the architects have gone through it, feel that everything there can be restored, and have developed very detailed plans about how to do it.
Executive Director of the Preservation Alliance of Philadelphia, John Gallery. Bidding in the sale of the Boyd Theatre is open until Wednesday, with the name of the new owner expected in the coming weeks.
You're listening to Creatively Speaking on WRTI.
Philadelphia's Settlement Music School has been giving music lessons for 100 years. As part of its centennial celebration, the school has selected 100 past and present students, faculty, and others to honour. Now WRTI's Susan Lewis looks at the history, the people, and the impact of this 100-year-old community resource.
For some kids, Saturdays might mean a chance to get outside and hit baseballs. Or perhaps shoot some hoops with the dog. But there are also a bunch of kids who flock indoors. Settlement Music School on Saturdays is filled with the sounds of music. And kids.
I take ballet, violin, and I go to music workshop.
The piano, and I play recorder, drums, and that's all.
I play in a quartet with a piano, cello, violin, and viola.
These 21st century music students are joining the ranks of over 300,000 people who've learned and played at Settlement Music School. In the early 20th century, the Settlement House providing services to immigrants in the South Wharf section of Philadelphia also included music lessons. Current executive director Robert Capanna, who's been with the school over 30 years, says the essence of the program hasn't changed all that much since those very early days.
The only thing that we don't do that was originally done is that we no longer give baths and sewing classes and English lessons.
Okay, so the details may have changed a bit. Settlements also expanded, branching into other neighborhoods in and around Philadelphia. 5-cent piano lessons gave way to instruction in all musical instruments, taught by professional musicians, including members of the Philadelphia Orchestra. In 1914, Settlement became an independent music school, and in 1917 moved into what is still its main branch, the Mary Louise Curtis Building at 5th and Queen Streets. While its conservatory division became the nucleus of the Curtis Institute of Music in 1924, Settlement continued to offer instruction to all musical levels, from beginner to pre-professional. Former student Ann Hobson Pilot is now principal harpist of the Boston Symphony Orchestra.
I studied the harp with Edna Phillips, and she became, I guess you would call her, my mentor. Settlement Music School gave me a very good start.
Pilot is one of the 100 people Settlement has chosen to recognize during its centennial, and one of the many professionals who trace their musical beginnings to this community school. Conductor Mariana Paoni Gabi is another. The first American woman invited to conduct in China, Gabi was a young child when she came to Settlement to play the violin.
That was right after the war, and that meant that we had teachers from Europe. Because the director was from Europe, we had top-notch people teaching us. And of course, we didn't know it at the time. We were too busy finding out where we fit in the group, right? And what we were going to wear to the concert.
Dollar-a-week horn lessons in the late 1960s paid off for Joe Anderer, now principal horn at the Metropolitan Opera. But Anderer says he was truly smitten by the chamber music ensemble run by bassoonist Shirley Curtis, a love that followed him to New York City.
I tried for a long time to do as much chamber music as I possibly could, and I used to think of my freelancing in New York as being what I had to do to subsidize my quintet habit. But Shirley's the one that started all that.
Although its alumni play in major orchestras all over the country, Settlement, in selecting the 100 people to recognize for its centennial, was not going for the most accomplished in classical music, says Executive Director Bob Capanna, or even the most important contributors to the school. Instead, the goal was to show the variety of the lives Settlement has touched.
Many of whom had had remarkable achievements, but some of whom just had terrific stories and were interesting twists on how a life informed by music can turn out.
So the list includes a Nobel laureate, Pulitzer Prize and Academy Award winners, musicians, scientists, teachers, business people, philanthropists, writers, and actors. People distinguished as individuals, but also by the eclectic mosaic they create when considered together. There's writer Libby Harwitz.
When I was about 12 or 13, I went and I had the great privilege to study with the second violinist of the Budapest String Quartet, Edgar Ortenberg. I did chamber music and studied violin. I am not a gifted violinist. I had a lot of passion.
And Rick Marvin, film and television composer.
I studied with a wonderful teacher named Don Rappaport. I studied counterpoint and theory with him, and was the first time I actually studied classical music. Up to that point, I've been playing jazz and rock and pop, and it was a wonderful experience.
Settlement was, after all, a place filled with young people discovering music on stage and off.
I would go to lessons on Friday. The director at the time, he would give me tickets to the Philadelphia Orchestra.
All the students went. And when you came out of there, your neck was like, oh my God, I'll never be able to straighten out because we were in the first row in the orchestra pit. But it was such a marvelous experience.
And studying music at Settlement wasn't about only, well, music.
It's Dr. Perchik. He says, don't pick your nose and pay attention. He was very nice. He was very strict, and he got right down to business.
A South Philadelphia kid named Chubby Checker took piano lessons and would go on to create a red-hot dance craze.
Come on, baby.
Little did I know back then that the things that I learned there, I'd be using in my music career far beyond my expectations.
And go like this.
This year's celebrations have triggered lots of memories, Settlement somehow managed to combine instruction, discipline, a connection to a larger musical world, and, says Michael Bacon, film composer and half of the Bacon Brothers band, a sense of fun.
A lot of my friends would go after school, and I remember one time I played drums in a wind ensemble, and that was my dream always to be a drummer. So Settlement to me always was a relaxed, fun place to be, which is what you really need to provide for children with music.
Michael's brother, actor Kevin Bacon, also one of the Settlement 100 honorees, suspects that if you scratch the surface, you'll find an enormous number of people enriched by music.
If I walk onto a movie set, at any given time, probably 25% of the people play something. Oftentimes, during lunch or after work, we'll start to pull out instruments left and right.
Another major player in the film world, Irvin Kershner, who directed the blockbuster The Empire Strikes Back, says his violin, viola, and composition studies at Settlement informed his highly successful movie career.
Rhythm, music, was very important. To me, always been the basis of a good film was a film that was rhythmically sound, a film that was like a piece of music.
And it's this idea that continues to drive Settlement Music School, that music can enhance everyone's life. Lawyer Beth Haas, who studied piano as a child, is a passionate advocate for Settlement, founding and co-chairing the Young Friends Committee to cultivate the next generation of donors to the arts.
When you talk to the musicians, particularly the young musicians, and you realize how playing an instrument, whether or not they're going on to professional careers, has changed their lives, that is what has inspired me and my husband to become very, very much involved in the school.
And so Settlement presses on, reaching out to everyone in the community, from the youngest, with its Kaleidoscope preschool program, to seniors up into their 90s, who play everything from strings to trumpet to chamber ensembles. But the proof of the passion is the music in the air, wafting from the windows, even on a sunny Saturday in the spring.
My goal is to reach the top and to be a good person and to play piano and teach my kids how to do it.
It's given me so many great opportunities to play all sorts of different types of music, and it's been great. Very fun. I wouldn't spend my Saturday anywhere else.
Settlement Music School students ending that report by WRTI's Susan Lewis. Today, the Germantown branch of the school presents a children's ballet recital at 1. On Wednesday morning, as part of the Adult Chamber Players Lecture Series, physician, flutist and fine arts photographer Andrea Baldock will talk at the Mary Louise Curtis branch on shared vocabulary of music and black and white photography. And on June 7th, all 6 branches of Settlement will host a public open house from 10 until 1. Thornton Wilder's Pulitzer Prize-winning play Our Town is among the most performed American plays. The venerable work has been produced on countless high school, university, community and professional theatre stages. This week, the Arden Theatre in Philadelphia takes on Our Town, and as WRTI's Jason Pfeiffer reports, the company is, in the process, partnering with and celebrating its own town.
Our Town begins in 1901 in the fictional New Hampshire community of Grover's Corners. In a folksy, straightforward manner, it's narrated by the stage manager, played by Eric Kissam.
This play is called Our Town. It was written by Thornton Wilder, who won the Pulitzer Prize for it in 1938.
The three-act play is a story that the Arden Theater's artistic director, Terry Nolan, says most people have had at least some exposure to.
Sometimes when I've told people we're doing Our Town, I can tell they're like, oh, that'll play. It is said that there is a production of Our Town being done on any given night at some point in our country.
Nolan says Our Town offers a snapshot of what it means to be a community, from the everyday life of growing up to marriage to death. The universal experience of these themes, the large cast, and the simplicity of its staging, it's scripted to be performed with little scenery and props, has helped make the play a very popular choice for theaters over the years. Yet while it's a very familiar show to many, Terry Nolan says it's still worth returning to.
In performance, you understand not only why it won the Pulitzer, but why it has endured. It is a great piece of theater. It is an amazing story. It is so interesting and true and funny and moving.
Our Town is a classic in the canon of American plays, and in the spirit of celebrating a part of theater history, the Arden is using the occasion to highlight a part of Philadelphia's own rich past. A wedding takes place in Act Two, and so the Arden production relocates this drama to the nearby historic Christ Church.
I've wanted to do part of it here in the Arden's Theater and another part in Christ Church since we moved in, which was about 14 years ago.
The Arden makes its home in an old, renovated factory warehouse, a building that Terry Nolan says was really too big and expensive for the theater company to buy over a decade ago. But the view of and proximity to Christ Church next door made the purchase irresistible. Located at 2nd and Market Streets, Christ Church was the tallest structure in colonial America for 56 years. Still an active church today, it's the birthplace of the American Episcopal Church and was a place of worship for many of the nation's founding figures, Benjamin Franklin, Betsy Ross, George Washington, John Adams. Donald Smith is the executive director of the Christ Church Preservation Trust. He says his group was eager to partner with the Arden, especially because of the play's overriding theme.
Well, this has been Our Town for 313 years here in Old City, starting in 1695 when Christ Church started with the first initial small church that was here. Then by 1744, we had finished the current building that's here.
As the audience is transplanted to the church for Act Two, the steeple bells are rung, welcoming viewers into a candle-lit sanctuary, using the same chandelier that's been there since 1744. The church scene starts off with a performance from a local guest choir, featuring a different group each show. There are 36 performances, so 36 community choirs, including a bell choir, are lined up for the show's run. The choirs join in with the cast for a number of songs during the show, but also perform a selection of their choosing. One of the first choirs showcased during a preview performance was the Cherokee High School Traveling Girls Choir from Marlton, New Jersey. Choir director Nicole Snodgrass says this is the first time her girls' choir has been part of a play, but the historic venue isn't foreign to her.
I used to sing here in the professional choir of Christ Church, and my dad sang here for over 30 years in the choir, so this is like home for me. So to be able to share that experience with these kids is really awesome.
In addition to the participation of local choirs, the audience can sing along with a hymn during the wedding. And three special guests from the Philadelphia community deliver lines from the audience each performance, including, in various performances, Governor Ed Rendell and a number of WRTI personalities, including this reporter. Our Town is a reflective piece, a meditation on the simple joys of life that, generation after generation, too often quickly pass by unnoticed. After 14 years of waiting for the right time to stage the Thornton Wilder play, Terry Nolan views the production as a golden opportunity.
For us to bring together a group of people and a community and special guest and to have a production that will include young and old, black, white, people from all different walks of life, it's just a remarkable opportunity. And hopefully people will leave not only having appreciated and seen Christ Church in a new light, but also walk away thinking, that is a great American play. That's a great American story.
A cast of 29 actors makes it the largest in the Arden Theater's history. Our Town in Old City is the culmination of the company's 20th anniversary season.
WRTI's Jason Pfeiffer. Our Town in Old City is at the Arden Theatre in Philadelphia through June 22nd. And that's it for this week. You can listen to past shows and subscribe to our podcast at our website, wrti.org. Creatively Speaking's theme music is by Bill Jolly. Our executive producer is Jack Moore, and I'm Jim Cotter.
Speaking is a production of WRTI in Philadelphia. Support for the program comes from the Pennsylvania Council on the Arts and the listeners of WRTI.